Hello and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
And this week we are going to review The Old Guard, a Charlize Theron movie that recently launched on Netflix. We have a bunch of kind of smaller things that it seemed like it was worth mentioning before we do that, though. The first one is a piece of news, which is that Peacock, which is the new streaming service from NBC Universal, launched this week, and it kind of seemed like no one really cared. Like, I saw a few stories. I mean, we ran some stories, but it really felt like there was not a lot of conversation about it.
There's only one thing on Peacock that I cared about, right? What was it? I forget.
30 Rock, like, upfront?
No, that's not it. Oh. Although I do, now that you mention it, that sounds fun, I guess. That's the little reboot thing that they were doing.
Yeah, they did, like, they used it. It was a reunion, but basically they used it to demo all their slate. Like, here's what we got on Peacock.
Yeah, that's not really of interest to me. What was it? It's the book, The Brave New World.
Oh, right.
Did you guys watch it?
No, I haven't watched it. I
heard it wasn't as good as we wanted it to be.
I heard it was, like, grossly misunderstood the nature of the book.
Which, like, is kind of disappointing because that's one of my fave books. Like, I would put it in, like, the top 20. But,
well, I think this is a good example of, like, the anti-Netflix. Like, here's what happens when streaming originals go through the traditional studio system, network system. Like, Brave New World sounds great. What did it say about drugs? Yeah, that's good. Drugs and sex sounds good. And, like, they're chomping on a cigar and sexually harassing people.
They're playing, like, pop music behind it. And it's like, you are fundamentally misunderstanding the general theme and premise of this work of art. Yes. But that kind of segues a little bit into the Ted Sarandos news. I don't know if wanted to talk about that at all. But
talk about that a little. Yeah,
I think,
sure.
I mean, who am I to say, but Ted, the head of content, right?
Was Chief Content Officer.
Promoted to co-CEO. At Netflix. Which feels well-deserved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's always kind of been like their, I feel like their primary spokesperson anyways. Like, Reed talks on the calls.
Reed doesn't do anything. I mean, but Reed literally is like a fly swatter for the media.
Yeah, he talks about the old times. He's like, remember, like, when
we used to ship DVDs straight to your house? Remember that?
Well, and then he's just like, streaming, it's gonna be a big deal. And you're like, yeah, no, I agree.
It is one. You did that.
Streaming's gonna be
well
a big
done.
Deal.
Good job.
It's like, bro.
Good job, buddy. No, to be fair, I actually think, I mean, he, you know, obviously has, in as much as we need to celebrate any business executive, he's done an amazing job and, I mean, essentially reinvented this company in the course of a decade. But I think for most of the people in Hollywood, whenever there's like a content announcement, whenever a Netflix show or movie wins awards, it seems like Ted Sarandos is really the one who was far more involved in that.
And like, with the direction that Netflix is going in to be like a, essentially like a huge, and this isn't like news or anything, but content producer, right? Like, with so many originals, movies, etc., like, you, it makes a lot of sense to have kind of like the a spokesperson for that and like a chief of that who is more public and is more around and, you know, has kind of that authority level within the organization, as opposed to Reed, who obviously has been a great business leader and is really, I think, involved on the tech side and the operations side, but maybe isn't as involved when it comes to just like the art of it all, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a big reason for it. I wonder if part of what they're thinking as well is also that Reed may not want to be the CEO of Netflix forever. And so they're also setting Ted to be the, you know, the successor when that time comes.
Yeah, that's possible.
It's good succession planning.
One other thing that was worth mentioning from that announcement, because it was part of the broader earnings release for Netflix, which is one of those weird earnings things where almost all the numbers were good. They grew by, I think, another 10 million users, which is sort of unprecedented pre-pandemic. You know, revenue is, in, you know, up, profits are up. but because the forecast, you know, wasn't quite as optimistic as Wall Street wanted, the stock actually took a hit after the announcement. But for listeners of the podcast, what you might care about the most is in the they also talk about the fact that this pandemic is ongoing. It's not totally clear when production of movies and TV can resume in a serious way. So they said that they basically have a full pipeline until the end of this year. And then they're hoping that since things are kind of starting up again, that then there's not going to be this massive disruption. And instead, what you'll probably see is it'll be a slow first 6 months of 2021, and then it'll kind of pick up again in the second half of next year. But it is kind of crazy that they, you know, went into this with so much original content in production that we really haven't noticed a slowdown yet.
I have two follow-up questions to that. First, did they mention Another Life specifically?
They sure didn't.
Okay. I was shocked by that.
They weren't like, this is the most important thing we're all working on.
Like, this is the number one priority vis-a-vis Jordan Brooks' hopes and dreams.
It's actually probably Extraction 2, since 100 million people watched Extraction 1.
Extraction 2 is Well, I guess the prequel to Extraction 2 is just the old guard, isn't it? But anyway.
There's a good fan theory, yeah, about that. I like that.
It's not a fan theory. It's just like, if you're going to shoot a guy, whatever, we'll get into it later.
Okay.
My second follow-up is, can't they just like bubble produce things? Like, yeah, can't you just like build a bubble?
That's their whole
like,
plan. I think that's kind of what they're doing, right?
But it's like, do it right now. Like, do it now. And HBO, take a note and do it now too with Succession. Like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. Test everyone. Put them in a bubble. Shoot. Get the fuck out of there. Let's go.
I mean, it's like the NBA. The only reason there's going to be any production at all for the second half of this year, it's just, you know, it's more expensive and slower than normal production.
Oh, wow.
I think we should just do all... like all native New Zealand production, like all just people in New Zealand, production staff in New Zealand, but every show is now has a full New Zealander cast and production.
That would work.
Sounds delightful. Or just everything is set on Zoom now.
Isn't part of
that'd be horrible.
Wrong. Veto.
Yeah. Because that's kind of what, like, TLC has kept up their pipeline of the content that I crave, which is various iterations of 90 Day Fiancé. And they've done that way. Like, they did one called Pillow Talk, where it's just them in bed with their, like, webcams, like the various couples. And then they did another one called Quarantined, where it's just them on their webcams at home with no producers. And it's just as engaging. It's kind of like, uh-oh, we broke it, because this is all we really had to do to begin with, and it cost us, like, $5 to do this.
You could just do that. What was that one show we reviewed on Netflix where they're on other sides of the door, but you just, like, never let them actually see one another?
Oh, Love Is Blind.
Yeah, you could just do, like, iterations of more and more people meeting behind the doors. And then that
and the Circle are very easy to do, yeah, because the Circle's basically the same thing, except in an apartment complex.
And then I know I said two, but my final thought there is, do you ever, like, sometimes wish that you were one of the new 10 million Netflix users? Like, as part of,
like, because it was new.
Yeah, like, can you imagine, like, in 2020 coming on Netflix and being like, oh, look at all this stuff, and I've never seen any of it. Like, I've never seen any of these shows. I've never seen House of Cards or Stranger Things or Ozark. Like, wow, that would be so cool.
That's sort of where I'm at, because not really, but in terms of the eyes of Netflix, that's where I'm at, because I realized when I was, like, trying to do some, like, personal finance management, which is fun, I was, like, looking at my recurring out subscriptions, and one was Netflix, and it was, like, $23 Canadian, because it was...
How?
And I was like, what the hell?
They don't even
But it was converting from the American. Like, I had, for somehow, whatever I signed up on at the very beginnings of Netflix was through their American billing system. So they've been billing me in US dollars, like, this entire time, which means that I've been overpaying by, like, at least $5 a month for
like
an eternity.
Years and years and years. So Netflix thinks you're new. And so I guess, did you have to, like, get a new account? Like, does it
not know what you like
or care about?
They're like, oh, well, it sucks to you. Like, there's no technical way to, like, change your billing. So, like, you just have to cancel that account and then start a new account. So now mine looks like oh, welcome to Netflix. Like, here's a bunch of stuff we have. And I'm like,
that's surprising to me because Netflix in general, in my experience over the past however many years I've been using it, is their customer service is pretty good. Like, they
are pretty good.
They're really helpful. They like, if your account gets like overtaken on Netflix and you call them, they'll like fix it. And like, if your account gets overtaken on Hulu, like, you're stuck like in a chat bot. Where you're like, can you please call me and fix this? And they're like, an agent will call you in 6 to 7 days. And you're like, well, that doesn't really help. So
yeah, no, I just don't. I don't think they have the technical ability to do this for whatever legacy reason. But also, like, there's another story going around about there's like a presentation someone gave in a big corporation, and they used a map that was like the racist map of the world. Did you see that? And it had like USA. I forget what company it was. It's so good. And then it has like all other countries, and there's like some like just super dismissive and racist thing said about basically every other country. And it was like, oh yeah, this was like in the board meeting, and everybody laughed and like thought it was funny. And for Canada, it said unoccupied, and that is kind of like how most businesses think of it. It's like, okay, if we could tack this on as kind of like an extension of our U.S. business, it's fine. But like, it's not statistically significant. No. I'm just saying that's representative of how a lot of U.S. companies think about Canada, right? Like, I'm looking at the Peacock because we were supposed to talk about Peacock. I have it open here, and it's just a huge page that says this service is unavailable in your region with a period on a gray background. There's nothing else.
Yeah. I mean, like, see, I think Peacock is U.S. only, so it's not just
in that
case. Yeah. But, so speaking of the racist map, this is so random, but I've been watching The West Wing. Uh-huh. Have you guys ever watched The West Wing?
I've seen a little, but not...
Well,
not very much, no.
On one hand, it has not aged super well.
Oh, Red Bull. It was Red Bull.
Oh.
Just to check.
That feels right. on one hand, it hasn't aged well, but on the other hand, it has Allison Janning in it, so it's like toss-up. But
fun.
There was a whole episode where this like special interest group came in and was like, maps are racist, and like... certain countries have been like made to look larger than they are, and like other places have been made to look smaller, and like the northern hemisphere is like at the top, so it's like associated with being like on top, whereas the southern hemisphere hasn't. And it was a really interesting episode.
Wow.
there's not like any interesting kind of finish to that story, other than it's interesting that you bring that up, because literally just last night I was watching a TV show that was talking about racist maps.
Maps are all bad. No one should use them.
Yeah, get rid of car. That's like
driving directions are good though. I like driving directions.
That's not news in America. We like can't pass a basic geography test. Like, fuck maps.
Well, I think that's kind of what this whole thing was about, though.
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention we might actually do a full review at some point, and Jordan hasn't seen it yet, so we can't get into a full discussion yet. But there is a new Andy Samberg movie on Hulu called Palm Springs.
Why do you say Andy Samberg movie and not what's her name movie?
Kristen Milioti.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Both of them. But, you know, I think one of them is a little bit more better known.
That's Isn't that fair? I feel like that's fair to say.
I don't know. I like her more than I like him. So,
I mean, I like them both in the movie, but she's definitely. I think is definitely the MVP of the movie. Well,
is
she J.K. Simmons
an equal star to him in the movie, or is she just like a smaller character?
No, she's equal star to him in the movie.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, sorry for the call out.
Everyone should watch it. It's great. It's like a riff on Groundhog Day.
Is it a rom-com?
It is a rom-com.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like that from the trailer.
But he exec produced it too, so I feel like
to
defend Anthony.
It's not made by any of the Lonely Island. It wasn't like directed by any of the Lonely Island guys, but I think they all produced it, so there's some level.
So did you guys like it, or did you love it, or did you tolerate it, or did you hate it? Those are the options.
Oh, I loved it, actually, so it's easy for me.
I would say either high like or low love.
High like or
but
low
like
love.
Right on the border there.
It's like a 7.
Yeah, a 7 or an 8 for me.
Okay.
I think that the middle drags a little bit, which is sort of thematically appropriate for the film, but the beginning and the ending are both amazing.
Yeah. I think it's like, I mean, there's obvious movies you can compare it to, but it's weird when you get like the Groundhog Day style movie and you're like, I guess I have to judge this against Groundhog Day. Like you do, right? And that's a much more, I think that overall it's like a much more even movie and it's better for rewatching, I think. But this feels similar in that it might become like a perennial favorite where I'd be like, oh yeah, like I could rewatch this once in a while and just like enjoy it, I think.
I don't think I like the Groundhog Day structure of things in general. When
that template of let's repeat.
Yeah. I don't really like care for that. But then I saw that Christina Milioti is in it.
Mm.
And so that balances things out and I will eventually watch it, which is why I don't want you guys to get super into spoilers. But did I bet I could Russian guess Doll? How it goes.
Did we do Russian Doll?
We did Russian Doll.
Yeah, I don't know if
it might have been during your gone time.
Yeah, maybe I was away for that one. I really loved Russian Doll too.
Oh yeah. I like to erase it from my memory. yeah. Russian Doll. I didn't like hate Russian Doll either, but like at a certain point, particularly on a series, like you're just like, oh my God, are we doing this again? Like with, and I have to like pay. It's like almost like when someone hands you two pictures and they're like, can you spot the differences? And you're like, I don't want to. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
That's not how I want to spend my time, is spotting the differences.
Well, I think also that Groundhog Day, what kind of makes it the best example of this form is that I get the sense that they just put a lot of time and energy into thinking about how to make that incredibly entertaining, and that you could see something over and over again and it would change and evolve in ways that were really funny, and you never got tired of it and got this sense of, oh my God, are we really, you have to watch this scene play out again. Whereas I think, partly because everyone else is more focused on other aspects of it, I think that's part of why Palm Springs gets a little bit tiresome in the middle, because you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it, for certain elements. But I think there are other things that Palm Springs does better, in particular, in Groundhog Day, really, there's the Bill Murray character who's interesting and sort of, and you know, it's an amazing performance on his part. And then there's everyone else who's fine, mostly fine. In Palm Springs, it's much more of like, I would say probably a three-person movie. And Andy Samberg, J.K. Simmons, and Christine Milioti are all very, very good. But yeah, Christine Milioti, probably the MVP.
Why don't I remember who J.K. Simmons is?
He's the guy, the yelling drum man.
From Drum Yell. I love him. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll watch it.
From Drum Yell, the movie.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
There's so many things you could pull from this movie.
Yeah. He's J. Jonah Jameson from all Spider-Man movies.
Right.
The dad in Juno.
Yep. The dad in Juno. That's a good one. So Greyhound or no?
Greyhound. Yeah. Well, you tell us about Greyhound.
Did neither of you watch it?
That's right.
No, of course not. Tom Hanks, Apple TV Plus original movie. And
although originally planned for release in theaters and then kind of like the Lovebirds, Sony sold it to a streaming company.
Yes. Right. And Tom was not pleased. He did like a little press tour where he was like, you know, our Apple overlords are making me do this interview with like a white wall background and I look like a sicko or something. And then, like, the next day, he was like, Apple's really great. Like, Apple totally saved the day.
They reminded me how much money that I will lose from disparaging
and
them.
And Apple's really super cool, guys. So, like, don't forget about that. But he did say something on the first day of his press tour where he was feeling a little bit more open, where he was like, this should have been released in theaters. It was meant to be seen in theaters, like audio, the picture quality, all of those things. And part of me like agrees with him, you know, like
fancy ocean.
Yeah.
That's a big ocean.
The premise of the movie is that, like, obviously in World War II, to fight a war in Europe, you have to get people to Europe, you know, from the US or at least on the American side of things and Canadians, etc. And that you can only have air cover for so long, right? Like the planes couldn't just fly with the boats across the ocean. There was like a pit in the middle where they had no air cover and they were very, very exposed to German U-boats and submarines. So this is about like that 52-hour period or whatever where they're trying to get this big kind of caravan of ships, and some are medical ships, some of them are supply ships, merchant ships, some of them are big fuel tankers, and then obviously there's some warships, and Tom Hanks plays the captain of kind of the lead warship or battleship that is meant to defend them from the U-boats. I would say like it's good, not great is where I would put it. Like obviously you can only get like so interesting with like World War II naval warfare, right? Like there's only like so much action involved in that. It's not like there's like hand-to-hand combat and like, you know, gunfights. Yeah. And like you can get super high octane. Like it's the ocean, things move a bit slower, but they found a way to make some interesting kind of like exciting moments happen. And then it can be a little bit technical at times. So like in one respect, it's almost too realistic because they're getting super into the technicality of like the blips of the radar and they're shouting out coordinates and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then on the other hand, there's this whole plot line. I'm glad you're back, Daryl, because I'm talking about how the listeners can know. Daryl had to answer a phone call, but now he's back.
I had beer delivery. The beer delivery guy was
calling. This takes precedence. But like, okay, so on one hand, it's too realistic because they're like shouting out coordinates and like getting really into the nitty gritty of like, you know, how the ships work and how communication happens. And you're like, I don't know what the fuck you guys are talking about. But then on the other hand, there's this whole plot line where there's this German U-boat called like the Grey Wolf. And
wait, so their boat's called the Greyhound and the other one's called the Grey Wolf?
Maybe it's called the Black Wolf or the Sea Wolf. I don't know. But it's a something wolf. Different. It's got like a wolf painted on it. I don't know. But the captain of that U-boat like gets on the comms and is like, hello, Greyhound. We are coming for you. You will not make it through the night. You know, and it's like, really? Like, I'm pretty sure that, I don't know, maybe the Germans were like
fun? Like they wanted to have some fun.
I don't know. Or like psychological warfare or whatever. But it just feels like maybe from what I know, I mean, maybe they were all hopped up on meth. So maybe, I don't know. But like, it just seems like it was a pretty tight ship over there. And that like kind of like improvising the way that you went about these battles was not likely to happen. But yeah, I would, like I said, I'd give it a good, not great.
Yeah, is it long? That'd be my one concern with it. But
I don't think so. I think it was like a 2 hour. Like it's like a standard movie. It's not
actually,
like,
I read it was like closer to an hour and a half. Like,
yeah, oh, okay. I don't think it's very long.
That's pretty good. I just don't know if I need Dad Hanks at war anymore, or Dad Hanks doing much of anything really, except for.
You only say that because you're not American. I don't think any American.
That's right. That's right, because he's beloved by your pathetic country.
Oh my God. This is all staying in.
That's a mean thing to say. I mean, we're not great over here. Like, I'm not super duper, like, a huge fan of America right now, but don't call it pathetic. And don't dare say a word about Tom Hanks. That's a
you
much
can't say
bigger
anything bad about Tom Hanks. Cloud Atlas.
I mean, he's.
I just said Cloud Atlas, but I don't know why I said that.
Cloud Atlas. It's great. Tom Hanks at war is like gives me a lot of comfort. It's a lot like watching The West Wing right now.
I mean, you can't say anything bad about Saving Private Ryan. Obviously, that's a fantastic movie. But I don't know.
The epilogue sucks. The rest of it's very good.
The epilogue, like the first 40 minutes where just everyone's blowing up.
No, the epilogue where at the end where it's like old Private Ryan and he's just like, tell me I'm a good man.
Makes sense because you said an epilogue and that's at the end. So right. That makes a lot of sense.
The rest of it's fine.
It's all coming together for me over here. Sorry, I was, you know, educated in America. So.
But that like, I do want to think, like with Apple TV, and I know we talked about a lot of the early stuff. I haven't really watched anything that's come out since we talked about a lot of the early stuff on Apple TV.
Did you watch
Plus.
Mythic Quest?
Yeah, I did watch that and I liked
that.
Did
you watch Defending Jacob?
No.
I watched that.
Everything else to me looked very unappealingly middle of the road. I don't know what it looked like. The thing that people had criticized Apple for maybe doing came true of, like, if you make stuff that's so bland, that's so, like, broadly appealing, like, it'll end up bland.
Right, like, it doesn't have a point of view.
Yeah. And that's kind of what the rest of the stuff felt like, but I can't say because I didn't watch it. But, like, the reason was that I felt like all the trailers for the things made me think that, right? Like, I think I shared one of the thing of even this upcoming Jason Sudeikis project, and I'm just like, I don't know. Sure. American Out of Water in Britain, that was a funny concept in some of the other stuff that I've seen previously. Like, what's one? Not extras. Scripts, drafts, something like that. But anyways.
I thought Defending Jacob was all right.
Yeah, that one was all right. You liked that one, I remember. Yeah.
It wasn't, like, great or anything, but, like, it as far as, like, a crime thriller goes, like, it was relatively thrilling, and it did incorporate crime.
Episodes, yeah, that is what I'm thinking of. And I think it was actually the other way around, now that I think about it. British people out of place in the other country. But good. Oh, the one where David Cross... Did you ever see that one where David Cross went to England to, like, stand up an office for, like, an international company, but he ends up charged with treason, high treason, and it's pretty funny. But anyways, I can never remember the names of things that I watch now. All
right. I'm ready to shit on the Old Guard. What about you
guys? Let's talk about the Old Guard, a film on Netflix, as we mentioned, which... I mean, certainly for the past week has basically been that number one slot on Netflix, and I suspect when they release their slightly loving confusing and hard to believe numbers about viewership.
700 million people have watched The Old Guard. Yeah.
I fully expect that The Old Guard will be their most viewed movie of all time.
You think it'll beat Extraction?
God, I hope so. It's better than Extraction. It's way better than Extraction. I'll give it that.
Okay, so, Daryl, without giving anything away, I suspect you were probably the one who liked this movie the most. So why don't you tell us what the concept is?
I love this movie.
Without giving things away. Good luck.
Oh, I meant not giving away the fact that it's going to be 2-1 here.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, like, plot-wise, I have to talk about how they're immortal. Like, I don't think that you can get around that.
There's no way to get around it. Is it in the trailer? Because I was pretty sure I watched the trailer and thought, like, oh, it's another movie where, like, these elite squadron people, like, save kids in a school.
Yeah.
And then, like, I guess I didn't pay close enough attention because I was I was very shocked in the first, like, 20 minutes.
I think that if you paid very limited attention to any of the hype cycle around it, you wouldn't know that. But if you'd paid any attention at all, you would know that. Okay. There.
If you paid at least 51% attention.
Yeah.
I pay attention to other things. Go on.
Yeah, that's fair. So, yeah, like, basically Charlize Theron leads a highly skilled tactical squad. And
with no it's unclear how they make money. They have no affiliation. They're mercenaries,
but you don't know. They seem to have a code. They're mercenaries, and they seem to have some kind of moral guidance on top of like what missions they will accept.
Explain what this code is.
No, they don't. And that's,
we know that they don't repeat things.
Yeah. They don't do repeat business for customers. So that's part of it.
Although I get the sense that it's less to do with an ethical code and more because they don't want people to know that they're immortal.
Yeah. They're trying to hide their identity. So they there's also a scene really early on where they, like, Charlize Theron gets rid of photographic evidence of just her. Like, someone asks her or takes a selfie, and, like, she knows she's in the background. So she cleverly deletes the picture.
Except for she doesn't go into deleted photos and delete it. And that was the first thing that came to mind. Like, that's right. That they could just restore it. Still exists. So
yeah.
Good job, Charlize. Yeah.
That's right. Also, everyone has it because there's a secret deep state backdoor to all your phones, photos. Everybody knows that. And
you're great today, by the way.
Yeah, so they are, they do, they make, they break, make an exception to their rule, I guess, is the, is the primary plot of this. They're going to do a repeat mission. They're getting back together after a period of absence, getting the gang back together for one last job, except not really one last job.
No, just there's another job. Such thing as last jobs for them.
Yeah, yeah. And then in the course of that, you realize, like, this is, they're being targeted, and the people are after them this time, and like, that's kind of what drives the action, right? No, I don't think that gives away anything, but I think that sort of summarizes what happens.
And you loved it.
I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was amazing. There was nothing I would improve about this movie. It was perfect in every way.
Wow, that is so stupid. Like, you hate everything, and then when you like something, it's so dumb. Like, what is that? Whatever.
This is like Charlize Theron's Bright moment.
Oh my god. Wait, so I will say though, like, as far as action movies go with a female lead, which we could always use more of in my opinion, mm-hmm. Charlize is the way to go. Like, she is just perfect. And you can tell that she like puts so much work into like the actual action scenes. Like, I don't know about this one, but I know with Atomic Blonde, like, she did as much as they would actually allow her to do legally in that film, mm-hmm. right? Like, all the fight scenes, like, you can tell that she works really, really hard to, you know, bring that to life and make it look realistic and just look fucking cool and fast and, you know, awesome. And she's also just a incredibly skilled actress, so you know that was all for me. You know,
she definitely did a lot of her own stunts on this, and I remember seeing this story. I just double checked, but she ended up having to get 3 surgeries on her left arm as a result of the work that she did on this movie to repair her thumb and her elbow. So yeah, she was into it. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that. That comes through. Although I will say that for the first, like, I don't know why. I don't think it necessarily is a byproduct of the film. Maybe it is, or maybe it was just like the mental space I was in. But for the first like 20 minutes of the movie, I could not be in the movie. Like, I could not, I was like, look at these two actors acting. Like, they're still acting. And like, why didn't she zip her backpack after she unzipped it? Oh yeah, because she's acting. And that wasn't important, you know, like, I don't know, it took me a really long time to feel in any way, like, immersed in the movie. Like,
I think some of that may just have been your mood, but some of that may have to do with the fact that the script is not good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I say this to Daryl. So it's based on this graphic novel written by Greg Rucka, who also wrote the screenplay. Greg Rucka wrote like probably some of my favorite Batman comics of all time.
Which ones? Which story arcs?
Like the late 90s like run in Detective Comics.
Okay.
He did like really, really sort of in the No Man's Land and post No Man's Land era. Now we're getting real deep. But I guess he also co-wrote Gotham Central, which I did not follow as closely. And
that's supposed to be being made into a series as well, right?
So yeah, whether or not it'll be directly adapted, it's not clear.
Right.
But then he's done a bunch of creator-owned comics too, like Queen and Country and Whiteout, and basically is a very, very good writer. And so I had pretty high expectations for the script. And oh boy, it was this was not a good. I mean, it's one of those scripts where, what was the line, Jordan, that you quoted in our chat where it was just like,
oh, that was good.
I lead a group of immortals. You've got questions, kid. I get it. I mean, it's less that the dialogue is just laughably bad, but all of it is just so on the nose. You know, it's just like whatever the most obvious thing to say in any given moment is.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they'll say. And I think particularly in the beginning, it feels extra clunky because they're trying to do this exposition to explain the concept. And there's no artfulness to it at all. They just sort of stand around and tell people what the concept is, which is particularly annoying, too, because there are essentially no rules to anything, which generally I'm okay with. I like crazy, surreal shit. I don't need it to make sense. But they spend so much time explaining it, but all the explanations basically mean is there are no rules. At some point, the immortals will stop being immortal. When? Why? Who knows?
That was the biggest weakness of this.
And like, the fact that they're immortal to begin with. But yeah, go on.
Well, it's definitely amazing that they had the gall to just be like, all right,
it
like,
fades over time.
These people are all perfect. Also, they can lose that at any time for no reason. And that's really just so that we can use it for to plot reasons. Like I've never seen anything so baldly just do that. Like, all right, we'll make everybody really super cool until we just don't want them to be anywhere. Like, normally that's what happens. That's what happens with every Superman story ever written, for instance, right? But yeah. Like, there's more subtlety to it in all of those than there is in this one, where they're just like, and then sometimes it doesn't work, and there's no reason.
And the timing of it too is just like, it's like insulting to me as a viewer, where like, we just showed up at this climactic moment with the final boss. Now's the time.
That's kind of like what I like about this is it's very blunt. It's a very blunt film, but it doesn't really try to apologize for that at all. I guess, and like, this is why the comparison to Extraction like makes so much sense. Like, Extraction is also blunt. It's like, hey, we did this.
Stupid.
Yeah, and this is stupid too. Like, we want to show you these people doing karate gun things, and like, cool, okay. Do we need a rapper for it? I guess so. Yeah, here's one.
Here's one.
And we don't want you to think about it too hard at all. So we'll just say it all out loud, and then you can get past it. Like, you don't have to think about it anymore after that.
So I think the comparison with Extraction makes sense too, because they're both a little bit of throwback movies too, because mm-hmm. action movies, with the exception of like John Wick and Atomic Blonde and a few other things, but for the most part, action movies now mean superhero movies that you spend $150 or $200 million to make. And so this isn't like a low budget movie, but I think reportedly it probably cost about $70 million to make, which is a lot of money, but not Marvel money.
Yeah.
And I think that in and of itself made it kind of refreshing, because it wasn't tons of CGI. It wasn't the final fights. None of the fights feel like they're just blowing things up left and right, and everything feels weightless and consequenceless. Like,
yeah,
everything is scaled down in a way that it's still exciting.
Like, the examples of Atomic Blonde and John Wick are like, also they're different because they have a very aggressive aesthetic, right? Like, they're
very stylized.
Yeah, they're very stylized, and this is not that either. This is much more like Extraction, where it's like, this could be a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, but then you put in like better choreography, because, or at least choreography more attuned to what a modern audience expects.
Well, I also
right?
feel like Atomic Blonde's script and plot was like far more thought out.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah. But it's just like, I think Anthony's only thing about bringing it up was like, it's not a superhero movie.
Right. There are a handful of non-superhero movies, but for the most part, it's superhero movies.
Yeah.
On the big screen.
Yeah.
Anyway, kudos to Charlize. And what's the name of the actor who plays Niall? I felt like I didn't really come into the movie until she was on screen. And that was like...
Kiki Lane.
Yeah. And that was like what made me feel more immersed in it, to be honest.
Yeah. Did we explain who Niall is? I don't think we did.
No, we didn't. I don't know what... I guess that's fine. There's a new immortal, and then they try to track her down so that they can...
And like
incorporate her into the group, essentially.
They dream about each other, so like they're connected in some way, all the immortal people.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of like rules for the immortals, but again, they're not really seemingly driven by anything except for what makes for convenient plot devices, right?
How would we know she exists if we don't dream about her? Let's write that in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which, I mean, I just to be clear, I enjoyed the movie. I just found it very aggressively dumb. In probably similar to Extraction, although the advantage this has over Extraction is at least it's a fantasy and explicitly escapist, whereas Extraction, which I also, you know, overall enjoy, but because it sort of takes place in a real world setting, in some ways, I think I'm less willing to be forgiving of how dumb it was.
Ridiculous it was.
Yeah, I think like this to me felt like one of those things where it would make a really, really enjoyable comic. And I actually I haven't read this series, but I imagine it would be enjoyable. And you'd be like, wow, that's really clever. But then as soon as you try to transpose it to a medium like film, it's like, oh, this is dumb as hell. But I don't think you would notice in the comic book format, I think you would be like, wow, that's a clever twist, because you're thinking about it relative to other comics. You're not thinking about it relative to movies, right?
Well, I also just think dialogue, when sort of on the page, and particularly in the context of, like, you know, superhero and action comics, like, you know, you're used to some dialogue just basically stating stuff outright. Whereas, like, once you hear it coming out of an actor's mouth, you're like, oh, that's not very good.
She might have as well have just been like, bam, bop.
Yeah. But Charlize is also great. She is, I don't think she has to work quite as hard as she did in Atomic Blonde or in Mad Max Fury Road, but she, like, just has, like, so much charisma. And if I had one wish for her role in the movie, it's just, well, A, that she had better dialogue, and B, that she has this axe that you I think plays a prominent role in the trailer, and you see it very early on. You're like, oh my god, you're gonna see, like, some crazy action with this axe. Mm-hmm. And it's really not used that much,
but the action that you do see is the coolest action in the film, in my mind.
The axe action,
yeah, her with the axe is the coolest. And then the second coolest thing was the fight in the plane.
But yeah, the plane fight was really good.
That's just my opinion, obviously. And I have to say, because I wasn't paying attention beforehand, when they, like, whipped out swords at the beginning, I was like, what the fuck am I watching? Why do we have swords? And then I was like, oh, it makes sense, because they're probably really good at sword fighting.
That is definitely your first, like, in-film signal that something is very different here, because they're, like, they're all geared up on, like, a helicopter for their, like, insertion, and then they have, like, big broadswords and stuff strapped to their back, and you're like, oh, okay, this is different.
I love that. I wish the general ratio of swords to guns had been more in favor of swords.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, yeah. But I like it because it's practical. You wouldn't use your swords that much unless you were getting really in their tight quarters. And if it's more convenient to use your gun, you would do that, I would think. And they seem to use them very practically. In like, oh yeah, I have this, and I'll just use this right here. And then this is easy to hand, so then I'll do a good stab. Like, yeah, that way.
I liked the mixing of the two, because it's pretty rare to see, like, someone with a sword in their left hand and a gun in their right hand, like, chopping it up, you know? But I will say that one signal, too, is the scene right at the very beginning where the dude, I forget his name, the kind of right-hand guy to Andy, is, like, sees someone and they're like, oh, man, you haven't aged a day. And he's like, oh, yeah, I have. And I was like, why is that ringing in my ears? Like, something about that line. Remember, this is before I know that they're immortal. So I was like, why does that feel so heavy, that stupid, needless line? And then turned out it was supposed to feel heavy.
Yeah, the tagline for this movie, by the way, is "Forever is harder than it looks."
Oh my god! Is it spoiler time? Because I kind of do want.
We should move in. Yeah, to spoilers.
I mean, if we haven't already.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen The Old Guard already, don't want to know how it ends, you should stop listening now.
Okay. Spoiler number one, I guess, for me, was that, like, when Niall finds out that she's immortal, obviously, like, there's like a whole 2-hour period where she's, like, really upset about it. But then they're like, oh, your family will die. And, like, she was just like, I'm ready to be part of the group. Like, I don't
know. She has a moment where she wants to go back. That's part of the dramatic action, right? She's like, I'm going to go back to the family. And then she's like, oh, maybe I won't go back to the family.
I don't know. It just felt like really... Like, that's actually something where, like, okay, you've got me bought into the idea that these people are immortal, which is tough work, but you did it. And you did it, like, really quickly, right? Like, they just get shot to pieces in the first, like, 10 minutes of the movie. And you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. But then... you actually have the opportunity to do something truly, like, emotional and real. And it just feels like very, like, we just have to touch this base real quick. Like, let's just touch the base and walk away from it.
Yeah. I felt in general the way that everyone treated Niall when she survived getting her throat cut was also in the same vein, where I just didn't really believe. I mean, I understand that it would be freaky, but everyone just immediately is like, you are some kind of monster. Get away from me. And that is not how I would react if somebody survived getting their throat cut. I'd be like, whoa, that is, all right, you're my friend now.
Yeah, there's nothing else different about her. So they, and no one even makes an attempt. Like, they all just are like,
Well, and you'd think she'd be like hooked into like tests and stuff. This is like the United States military. You're telling me
they're getting ready to do that, right? Like, I find that part believable because they're moving to do that when Andy intervenes.
It just seems like there wouldn't be a period of time where she would just be like sitting or like doing push-ups or whatever. Like, it feels like you'd be the doctor in that surgery being like, she's healing before our eyes. So I'm going to call my CO right now and be like, yo, we've got an auto
healer. I think they would do that. But then I think, like, I don't think the Army is that efficient of an organization. I think they would it would take them a while to get things going because they would be like, well, I don't believe this. Or they would just be like,
no, I have a hard time believing that they would let someone who in front of other soldiers had their neck slit open just like up and about the next day doing a workout. Like, I really have a hard time believing that.
I just don't think that information would be reliably like transmitted and also believed immediately. Because your gut reaction should be to be skeptical about that, right? Like in any kind of situation where you're professional, like it's like,
yeah, maybe,
yeah.
But also, the fact that like she's not like she immediately goes into like cover up mode too, and she's like, oh yeah, like skin graft, and not like, I don't know why the fuck I'm alive. This is really fucking weird. Like, that's probably where I would go. I'd probably get killed for it because I'm stupid. Mm. But like, I would be really freaked out. I'd be like, why isn't there a scar? I would be like in the doctor's office. Like, I'd like to speak to your manager. I want to know why I'm alive.
Yeah, she also did say that she died or whatever. Like, she felt like, oh, I died or something. But I don't know. It was, that was weird. But that was like, I don't think it was the most egregious of their narrative failings. Like, that was maybe one of the last annoying things about it.
You're just in defensive mode, Daryl, because you love this movie like it's your own child.
No. I just thought that part specifically didn't bother me that much. I thought that was like among the better treated parts, was like her process, not her friend's reaction. I thought that was stupid and totally unbelievable, like her friends and colleagues or whatever. But like, I thought her reaction to it and also like an instinct to hide it makes sense to me. And then also like the Army being sort of inefficient about doing it, but ultimately wanting to run tests, that all made sense to me.
What about the casting of the bad guy? How did you feel about that?
What? I don't even remember who the bad
CEO.
Guy is.
CEO.
Yeah, so Harry Melling, who you may write, he was Dudley Dursley in the Harry Potter movies. Yes. He's also the actor in, like, the disabled actor in Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Wait, who's Dudley Dursley? What character
He's
is that?
He's the evil cousin, or the bully cousin.
Yeah, like the Muggle cousin.
In the real world. Like, in not in Hogwarts, but like back
Yeah,
in...
exactly. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my
he's,
God.
He's a lot chubbier. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, like, he was larger at the time.
All the kid actors who were sort of, you know, tubby tended to sort of turn into these relatively conventionally good-looking adults.
Yeah. I wouldn't call this guy good-looking, but yeah.
Closer to it than...
Yeah, better. Better.
Than Dudley was. Yeah, how did you... Well, so it sounds like you have thoughts about this.
I don't know. It but just yeah, felt this too guy, on Stephen the nose. Merritt. Just like, you know, like everything else in this movie. It was just like, oh, this like kind of like skeevy dude. I don't know. Just like felt way too on the nose. Like, give us an actual villain. Like, I guess he was there for like comedic relief in a lot of ways. Like, there's one scene where at the very end, his guys are like ready to defend him at the door, and it's definitely like a super dangerous situation, and he grabs like, what does he grab?
He grabs her axe.
Oh yeah, he has her axe in his hand, and he's like, you know, and like he has a little moment where he kind of like re-grips it and like readies himself, but he knows that like, what's he gonna do with an axe? And so maybe he's just there comedically, I guess, but it would have been nice to have a final boss who was actually a final boss.
I thought he was pretty... when he was doing some of the stuff where he was like talking about like the testing or whatever, I thought he did a good job of like edging into like really vile evil territory. Like, you got the sense that he was actually despicable, but like, I did feel like they played it pretty easy. Like, it's like, okay, let's take this guy, we'll make him a sort of sweaty pale nerd, and then you're not going to like him. And I was like, I don't like him. I find, but you're also just trying to like trick my amygdala by like doing the easiest possible, like, you know, squirrely pale villain guy. Like, come on. And it was nice kind of that he's like the tech guy that's like, oh, I have all my tech dreams and I can make the world better. And it's like, yeah, that's right. They do all think that. And maybe immortal Charlize Theron should cut all their heads off. But that's too much.
I thought one of the lines in the movie that was genuinely pretty good was when he says, you know, I released these cancer treatments last year and we killed 25,000 lab rats in the creation of those cancer treatments. I don't regret those deaths. I don't regret what we're about to do to you. And I was like, all right, that's a good villain line. That's solid. That's a point, you know, like it feels like he has a real point of view. A despicable point of view, but like, all right, that's like fine. I would actually say that what I had a harder time with was the Chiwetel Ejiofor character, Copley? Mm-hmm. Copley, who is introduced as basically the guy who gives them their first job, and then you find out that he's the one who set them up to get captured by Merrick, the biotech CEO. And he then takes on this role of being like, no, we agreed. This is all about science. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to violate our ethics. Like, we're going to, like, do this in the right way.
What did
way.
You think was going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, you were the dumbest person in the world if you thought the cackling CEO was going to do anything ethical.
But I do think there's, like, it's good that he would be, it's believable that he would be, like, on board. Because even me, kind of, they were explaining the thing and they were like, well, like, we can learn from you things that could save, like, hundreds of millions of people. I was like, I can see that being a fair trade. And I think he was that way too. And then there's like an ethical line where it's like, oh, but like this, for him, there's shades of like, this is not okay for that. It's also confusing why like he's down for all that stuff, but then he's also the one who's tracked them all and seen all the good they do. And like, I don't understand that part. I understand if he's just like a guy who like,
it's because of his wife.
Right. If he's somebody who's figured out that they're immortal and then wants to get rid of them, that's good. But if it's somebody who's also tracked causally all the things that they've done to like through whatever mystic connection, like their thing ends up karmically being like way better, like then I wouldn't see him being like, yeah, let's harvest them for their cells, right? Because he's like, he's figured out the deeper story that they have some other role to play. So then he shouldn't be the guy that's like, but just like medically, we should figure out why they're invincible, right? But it's weird that he's both of those people in one character. Which again is
so much of his behavior is only explainable if he's the dumbest motherfucker on earth.
Yeah, for sure. And yet he's supposed to be like the genius who's figured out their shit.
Yeah.
But I would be down with it's like to the villains thing. I would be down for it. But then the way they got around that was they were like, oh, but they've tried this before. There's nothing. You can't figure out anything biologically. So then I'm like, okay, I guess we should let you go. But before that, I was kind of on the villain side of like, maybe they should figure out what is the secret. Because you're like, I don't know. These guys are just immortal. And they seem to act with seeming haphazard stupidity about like how they're like, I don't know, maybe we'll save this one, maybe this one, who cares, let's just fight. And it's like, is that a good way to use it? Maybe they should just submit to like medical study. But then they're like, oh no,
this
no,
is the
they
problem with this movie though, is because like you literally, it's too stupid, and you literally are sitting there trying to make sense of something that is so stupid. Like there's a scene where Niall and Andy are talking, and Andy's immortality has gone away eventually, of course, right at the moment that they're about to go meet the final boss. Her immortality wanes. And she's like, thank you, Niall, because you reminded me what it was like to feel powerful. And like the point of that whole conversation is like, get back to your like humanity and remember that like other people are humans, even if they're not immortal. Like each, they have a life and they have value, and like make those decisions about killing people with more responsibility. But like the actual scripting of that conversation was so confusing to me, because it was like, what do you mean to feel powerful? Like you've been powerful for like a billion years. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if anything, she should be reminding you what it was like to be weak and surprised by your own power, not the other way around. And now you are weak. Like, and of course, I'm doing the same thing that you were just doing. You're like, why am I even fucking talking about this?
What are we doing right now? I should be trying to make sense of this. But I'm only doing it retrospectively. During the thing, I was
trying
to make sense of it. I was just like along for the ride.
Well, that's what happens when we podcast about stupid movies. I mean, I liked it, but I like, come on. Come on.
Wait, okay. So let's talk. I want to talk a little bit about what happens at the end, which is that, as you said, it's actually revealed maybe about halfway through the movie that it's implied that basically God or fate or whoever gave them their immortality essentially takes that immortality away at some unpredictable point in time. That has now happened to Andy. Her wounds are not healing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that the only way you can sort of make that dramatically satisfying is that she has to die at the end.
Like, yeah.
She has to sacrifice herself for the rest of the team. Or if she survives, then it's like, I have survived. I'm going to go live a human
retire?
Life. Yeah, or something.
She's like, we're off to the next gig.
Right. And you're like, what? How are you just going
to... And she's still a leader.
Yeah, she's still the leader. That's cool.
No acknowledgement. Well, there's a little bit of an acknowledgement because they say that she won't see... So there's other character, Booker, who betrayed them. And so they basically say that they're not going to... They're sort of exiling him.
They ban him.
For 100 years. And so he's like, I will not see you again, because he knows that Andy will die sometime before then. But otherwise, in terms of like what this means for the logistics of their immortal mercenary group, now that the leader is no longer immortal, no one really addresses. And it feels like they wanted to have this suspense around, is the character going to die at the end? But they also don't want to, I think they want to make more of these movies. And they don't want to make them without Charlize Theron, so they just kind of dropped it.
But now it brings back an even better question, which is like, will she somehow regain her own
mortality? No, she will not. Future if she does, I'm going to boycott Netflix. I'm saying it right now.
All of Netflix. Okay.
And also, but like, even if she does, I'm still, no, she's not. But I think that they would bring her back, and part of like what I thought was actually interesting about the movie was when she lost her immortality, the way they like were body shields for her.
Yeah,
like you actually like,
that'll be cool. They'll all throw themselves in front of gunfire and stuff in the future.
I think she'll be more like a regular general where she like doesn't actually go in, right? She's just like the brains.
Yeah, that could be
the operation.
You felt like there was definitely some like passing of the torch to Nile stuff going on, but I guess that fits more with like if then she just died. But maybe she'll be like Oracle or something, another DC reference, like just sitting there, just like managing things behind the scenes. But I think it'll be way cooler if she's in it, and she's forgotten more. What's the line? She's forgotten more about killing than any of us would ever know, or something, and. That's what it's like. She's so good at an attack fight. It's going to be great.
I know, but it, like, it's not the same movie unless she can get up in the nitty gritty. Because like for me, I don't want to watch this movie if I'm not watching Charlize Theron kick ass.
Exactly. But she'll be fighting and the stakes will be higher because she'll be able to die, but she'll still be the best fighter.
No, if they weren't
going to
kill her in this one, they're not going to kill her in the next one. There's like a billion percent plot armor around her.
What about... They do that in Kingsman, don't they? Spoiler for Kingsman. No, wait. They do the opposite. They kill the guy in the first one.
They bring
him back in the second one.
Anyway, I'm over it. So if you guys have closing thoughts.
The last thing I wanted to say was just the fact that also the way they reveal that these immortal characters are actually heroic, not because of any conscious choice they make, but just because... there's some sort of like divine force guiding them. So when they save someone's life, it turns out, you know, three generations down the road, their granddaughter will, invent some sort of important medicine.
Vaccine or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I missed that entirely.
That was
his whole speech.
That was Copley's whole thing. Like Copley was like, look, I figured it out. And then he had all these maps and then like news articles of like, you saved this person
and, like,
here.
Strings connecting them, literal strings connecting the points on the map.
And that's why he becomes their Charlie? No. Well, who's the guy?
Yeah, Bosley. Well, Charlie. Bosley is the guy in between. I guess Charlie would be.
He's God more their Bosley, right? Because he's like the guy who like organizes them and tasks them or something.
Right. Anyway, I hated all of that shit. I thought it was like like the idea of how, oh, like these are these like dumb people who just go around murdering other people for money, but actually they're the great heroes of the world. I just found that loathsome.
No, that's great because. It means it's like do what you feel and it'll work out a few generations down.
Great. I just want to do Daryl's at things.
Yeah.
That really.
But what did
made
you think of
laugh.
the romance between Joe and Nikki that was the Cross Crusades romance? Did you find that a little bit too on the nose as well or what? Cause like
I like that.
That felt a little sarcastic.
I like that they were romantic and that they had this like long and enduring love, but I did find it a little bit weird that their origin point was the same and they were just on opposite sides of the Crusades. I felt like that was a little bit too, but like the rest of it, I thought was good.
Pay attention to that part, but I liked that there was a couple in it that were immortal together, and I liked that at one point one gets shot through the head and the one's like starting to worry, and then he's like, oh, stupid. Course. Yeah. It felt very like realistic and cute.
Yeah. Well, the stupid like the device of the random resurrection wearing off thing really worked in terms of making some of those moments like actually like every time he got shot, because he got shot a lot actually. I forget if it was Joe or Nikki, but one of them got shot a lot, and every time I was kind of like, oh no, he's not gonna come back, and it's gonna be so sad, and then he does, and it's like, oh,
no one's
like,
gonna die in this movie except for the bad guys, obviously.
That is what happens. There's a lot of other things that don't make sense, but we don't really have time
when it
that.
Said the old guard. I just said dumb at the end. That was how
well what about
dumb.
The post-credit scene though? That was fantastic.
What post-credit scene? I didn't watch it.
You missed it.
So they
greatest
introduced
of all.
This woman who's like the woman who was like immortal with Andy, the original other immortal, and then
the one who got Quinn? Thrown in the water.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And at that point, I swear to you, I predicted to the friend I was Netflix partying with, I was like, she's coming back either at the end of the movie or in the post-credit sequence.
Yeah, it's same.
And,
so she was back and she got out of the ocean?
Somehow, yeah. She just is waiting for Booker. And so you're like, uh-oh, she's going to team up with Booker and they're going to become like maybe
evil
immortals or something.
Oh, no. Because
she's gone crazy from all her time at the bottom of the ocean. That also really disturbed me, by the way.
That really disturbed me too. Like that whole
that
idea.
So very unpleasant.
Yeah, it was very upsetting. Like just
because she's dying.
Repeatedly.
It's not like she's just sitting there being like, oh, I'm in the
water.
No,
she's like literally over and over drowning. Sounds terrible. Ugh.
Bad.
So that should send you with some positive and good vibes into your weekend, listeners. Just
that's right. Yes, and
think
while
about
you
drowning for
that,
eternity,
don't forget to tweet at us at @originalcontent, email us at @originalcontent@techcrunch.com, subscribe and leave us a positive review in Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. And thank you so much for listening, Daryl and Jordan. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Yeah, you too.